From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Now, there's just one thing that I want to say to the gamers of Australia, and it's this. You've got to shower every day. You've got to use deodorant. You've got to wash your clothes regularly. Okay, technically that's like 3-4 things, all right? But look, think of it as a +5 charisma charm, and you'll be surprised. This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark. Good evening.
Hello, Trent. How are you going?
You're very well. What's coming up tonight?
Well, I've freshly showered tonight.
Thank you. And, I had noticed.
And speaking of people who shower freshly or who should, we're going to talk about all the different gaming events, or many of the different gaming events that are coming up later this year all around Australia. There's a whole calendar of events. We're going to talk about one of our favourite topics, really, I guess, card games. And we've got a special guest in the studio, Dave Bradford, family gamer, computer nerd, friend of the show, creates our podcast out of almost thin air.
And a man who witnessed firsthand your defeat at the recent Game of Thrones store championship.
I came fourth.
That's like, you know, fourth.
Out of five.
All that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. But for now, the dulcet tones of Gojira. Ah, yes.
Metal!
The soothing tones of Gojira, L'Enfant Sauvage. That's for you, Mark, here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With Trent and Mark and special guest Dave, who we'll be talking to in just a moment, but foist, as we always do every show, what the hell have we been playing lately? And there is a uniform theme to what we've had our hands on.
That's right.
Over this last week, it's all card games.
All LCG all the time.
And we didn't even plan it that way. It's just happened. I've finally sat down to learn Netrunner, or Android Netrunner,
yes,
with the colon in there. It's all about the colon with the new version of Netrunner, because, of course, this is the update of an old game that came out in
96, designed by Richard Garfield, the same guy who did Magic.
Magic, of course, huge, yes, as far as your trading card games go.
Still
going even now. Netrunner, widely regarded as a superior game by many, but didn't take off in quite the same way.
No, that's right.
Until 2012, when Fantasy Flight Games relaunched it. I've had this for a couple of weeks now. We might even have talked about it on the show. I picked up a second-hand copy.
You did mention it, yes.
And, look, frankly, it's been terrifying me, because this is really, really, really nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's nerdy even for us, okay? Because the rule book's just a pain. It's a terribly written rule book.
It is a typical fantasy flight fare where they make a meal of the rule book, and, you know, it's 30 pages to explain something that should take 6.
And it's full of terminology like, you know, your hand of cards is called your grip.
that's only one side, because the other side is called something else.
Yeah, and when you play cards face down, they're called servers. And cards have subroutines, and you've got to play icebreakers. Yeah, so it's hackers versus corporations. Mm. It's a two-player asymmetrical game, which means, you know, each player plays something different according to different rules. Yeah, and it's the sort of cliched cyberpunk that was last popular when Billy Idol was still making albums. Seriously.
William Gibson's Neuromancer, wasn't it?
Yeah, okay. Well, so
late 80s?
Yeah, Neuromancer, early 80s even. He started all this. Now, William Gibson's still writing, but he's not writing this crap anymore.
That's right. He's moved on.
Right. He's smart enough to realise that this stuff is hackneyed and cliched, but oh my God, this is a good game.
Yeah.
So the corporation's trying to advance agenda cards by playing tokens on them each turn, and at the same time, the hacker is trying to break into the server with their icebreakers to try and reveal that agenda and score it for themselves. So, look, I can't even really begin to do the rules justice to this, because it is really, really complicated. And it's, as you say, a living card game, which means that it's not collectible. There aren't rare cards and common cards that you have to wade through to get to the really good things.
Yeah.
But they release, I guess, booster packs, you might call them,
expansion packs. I'm not sure what they, like in the Game of Thrones, they call theirs chapter packs. I'm not sure what they call it in Netrunner. Do you know, Dave?
I think they call them data packs.
Data packs.
starter packs, yes.
So thematic.
And I think there's about 16 of, them, of, yes. of those out. I may have gone online and bought another three.
Oh, he's been bitten.
I am well and truly down the rabbit hole. It's a very attractive looking game. Mm, it is quite cliched to start with, but there's a great, great tension filled game in there, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, look, I've played it a couple of times. I really like the asymmetry that you talked about. The fact that basically both people are playing totally different games. You've got the corporation that's just putting all these cards face down, you've got no idea what they are. And then you've got the hacker who's sort of testing, probing on the corporation.
And has to do that. Like, the rules actually encourage that attacking, because nothing really happens
without
that.
That's right, because the timer will click away,
that's
the agendas will get resolved, and the corporation will win if you don't.
So you've got no other choice but to throw yourselves at each other.
I'd have to have a game with you sometime.
Yeah, but I actually don't recommend that people pick it up, because once you get into it and it's such a good game, you will start spending money. I mean, it only took a couple of days.
Well, speaking of which, I've been playing, as we've heard already, I've been playing the Game of Thrones living card game, which came out a bit earlier than the Netrunner one. It came out in 2008. Believe it or not, there is 70 chapter packs.
What?
So, you know, if you're going to pay the retail price of about $25, that's going to cost you, what, $1,600 if you wanted to go and buy every one copy of every single card.
Now, I might just introduce Dave here, because the two of you competed in the store championship at our local Nerd Shop Area 52 on the weekend. Mm. And how much money have you invested in this game, Dave?
Too much.
That's easy.
Yeah, definitely too much.
Yeah, I think conservatively, I would say, I hate to admit it, between $300 and $400.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, easily.
And I don't. I probably have the fewest cards of amongst our friends that play, perhaps.
Well, that explains why you came forth.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Oh, but can you tell us a little bit about it, guys?
Yeah. So, look, I'll go quickly. Yeah. Like your new normal card game, you attack or you don't attack. One of the things I love about Game of Thrones is there's actually three different ways of attacking. And it's very thematic. So there's the power struggle, where you're vying for power and you take these power tokens, which is how you win the game. You get 15 of those. There's a military attack, where you actually kill characters if you win one of those. And then there's an intrigue attack, where you actually steal cards, or you make the other player discard cards from their hand.
That's the stab in the back.
Yeah, so there's
so often in Game of Thrones.
There's three separate attacks, and obviously there's three defenses. Then there's another little war at the end of that, where you have dominance, so whoever has the most characters left that haven't been used, basically, and gold you've got left over gets dominance, and you can get power for that. Then there's another sub part of the game called the plot deck, which is a deck of seven cards. You reveal one of these at the start of each round.
Yeah.
And the plots themselves can just really change the game. Yeah. So I love the theme of it. The theme fits in well with the actual Game of Thrones storyline.
Yeah.
But it's just a different card game. I mean, and I guess like any of these card games, the beauty of it and the confusion of it is in the cards, because every card is has different stuff in it. So like there's simple rules, but then there's the cards. You can't memorize the thousands of cards.
And we should explain that you don't just go into these games, Game of Thrones or Netrunner or many of these games, with a deck of cards just in the middle of the table that everybody draws from.
You've actually got to build a deck,
design it, get cards that all work together. So half the game, well, you could say that the game is won or lost at home the night before when you put it together.
Dave was just saying today he's been spending half the week building new decks.
Yeah, I've tweaked one deck and built two new ones.
Mm. Yeah, so
since Saturday.
Is that what they call licking your wounds after losing the store championship?
Third is not losing. It's on the podium.
Okay.
Yes. No, it was just I made a few tweaks to the deck after Saturday. Took it in a slightly different direction, but still keeping the main theme.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones were just ones I wanted to build that I hadn't really got around to putting together, so I thought while I'm in the mood, I might as well build them now.
And it's one of the great things, is that, you know, in line with the theme, is your deck generally goes with one of the great houses of Westeros or another group. So, like the Brotherhood, you can build a Brotherhood deck, which is the group of sort of knights that are hiding out in the forest, or it's one of the great houses.
Is this just two players, or can everybody play?
You can play
each
up
of the
to
families
six.
From Westeros. Right, okay.
So there's two formats. There's Joust, one-on-one, obviously, and there's Melee, which is three or more, and you can play up to six.
Do I want you to teach me this?
Yeah.
Because it sounds good.
It is good.
Really? Am I going to be spending more money, though?
Shit does. Yeah.
Well, look, the thing is, generally, though, you tend to play one house, but when you buy these decks, they've got the cards from all the houses.
Right.
So I could easily give you half my cards and
you're
going to
give me all
deck.
The crappy families that you don't want.
Maybe.
Like those squid guys. And
no, I'm the squid guys.
Are you the Greyjoys?
Yeah, well,
I hate you guys.
See, I won the regionals with the Greyjoys, and then I abandoned them, you see, so I should go back to them.
Now, that's where you've made your mistake.
Yeah.
Talking of cards, I've been back on the iPad.
Candy Crush?
No, and I've got a bone to pick, and I'm going to do it right after this here on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. It's the Dice Men Cometh, talking board games and card games, in case you hadn't figured it out. Tom Lark, all night long, Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Trent and Mark, and special guest Dave here on the Dice Man Cometh. Dave's here to talk gaming with young kids and a family, and we're going to get to that in just a sec, but I want to have a little bit of a rant. Do your kids, Dave, know the Adventure Time with Finn and Jake cartoon?
No, they don't.
No?
No.
You haven't seen this?
No, I've seen a couple of comics on it, but not actually watched the show.
Do you know this one?
No, I've seen the pictures. I mean, like, I know what it is, but I haven't really watched it. No.
Okay, look, my little girl's just fully into this, okay? So she's 8 years old, and, I mean, this stuff, it's strange. It's got elements of the Cthulhu mythos and stuff, and it's really twisted and crazy. So when I see that the Card Wars game from one of their episodes has actually become a real thing, I got pretty excited. Okay, so Finn and Jake. Finn is like the last human in this magical land, and Jake's his dog that he grew up with, and Jake's really into this game called Card Wars, which is super complicated, but that makes it really cool. And this episode basically takes the piss out of gamers.
Yeah.
Okay, but the whole thing's come completely full circle. With no sense of irony whatsoever, because now there's actually a card game, the Card Wars game you can buy. In the episode, it's all like animated and volcanoes coming up out of the table and monsters that attack at each other and everything. The card game doesn't quite do that, but the iPad version does.
Oh, perfect.
Exactly. And hey, it's only like $5, so why not? And I need to get off and stop playing Candy Crush and find something else to do with my time.
Yes.
Okay, so, and my daughter's gotten into this, you know, it's just like a one-player thing, and we sat down, we figured out the rules, and this is fine. But man, it's just another huge money sink. You know those in-app purchases that they force you to make? And plus, you get a little deck of cards and you can sort of do a little bit of the deck building that we're talking about. But of course, you can't win any of the really cool cards.
Yeah.
And they're actually called cool cards. and there's no way of getting them unless you actually just spend more and more money. And I'm like, oh, God.
It's the perfect consumer model for that sort of thing. And I remember, obviously, we talked about Magic earlier, you know, one of the granddaddy of these type of trading card, collectible card games, because quite early they developed Magic Online that you played on your PC, where you actually bought digital boosters with the random card generations, and then obviously you could win boosters in your tournament. You pay money to go into tournaments that are online. They basically moved the whole model online. I think they had something where if you managed to buy a whole set, then you could actually redeem it and get the physical set.
Ooh.
But big bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking, well, this digital stuff is just rubbish. You know, my daughter's going to get my credit card and just, you know, spend us out of house and home. So I thought I'll look into buying the actual physical version and we can sit down and play this together, because she loves this cartoon.
Yeah.
Right? She's all over it. And so I'm researching this. Lo and behold, Cryptozoic, and this is just in the last 2 weeks, the poop has absolutely hit the internet fan.
Yeah.
All right. And all the fans of this game have gotten up in arms, because they've released two starter decks, which are self-contained, a la the LCG system that we've been talking about. And now they're supplementing that with random booster packs. Okay, so every let's say they're $10. I'm not sure how much they're going to be.
Yeah.
But every pack of 10 will contain 7 common cards, 1 ultra rare one. I mean, you know, look, I'm just making
super
these
cool
numbers. One super cool card. So you've got to buy all this this crap. It's like the swap cards with the horrible stick of bubblegum in them in the days of old, what we used to buy from the milk bar for $2.99.
And you don't even get the gum.
So Cryptozoic is saying, oh, but if you buy a whole box of them, like a retail-sized box, you'll get one of every sheet that we print, and there's a reasonable chance you'll end up with one of everything.
Yeah.
So there's been a huge backlash. They're sticking with it, Cryptozoic, for the moment. But I, for one, will not be going that way.
Yeah, well, that's definitely
purely because of that decision.
That's definitely the magic card model. And clearly, you know, you look at Pokemon, they do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yu-Gi-Oh!
And Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Are two properties that just go and go and go.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
right.
Who would think that in 2000, what year is it now, that people would still be playing Pokemon, for God's sake?
Yeah. Adults playing Pokemon, even.
Yes, and perhaps it's adults who really want to play Adventure Time with Vinager.
What's interesting, though, to see this the way that the digital world has come to card games, because I think, what's his name,
Richard Garfield
released a game earlier this year called Soulforge. I don't know if you guys heard of that one.
No, I don't know that one.
Which was basically a whole new magic genre type thing designed purely for the online world, with in-app purchases for the iPad. It was launched with a lot of fanfare, sort of has died a bit in the backside. But, you know, you look at a game, there was a deck building game called Ascension, and it didn't really do very well. But the online version, the app version, has gone berserk. Yep. And again, you can buy the expansions and everything. So there is clearly a big market in the online world, and, you know, an iPad is the ideal device for these, or a tablet, not wanting to be platform-specific.
No,
but,
no.
You know, a tablet-type thing is the ideal device for these sort of online games when they're in-app purchases.
These are a license to print internet money. Mm,
absolutely.
Now, so for tips on gaming with your kids and with your family, tip number one, we'd suggest don't get into an LCG or a collectible card game if you have a mortgage to play. For more tips, we'll have a chat to Dave Bradford, our special guest on The Dice Man Cometh, next on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
It's not serious, just like when we play games. It's not serious, although it can be serious business at times. You're with The Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM, with Trent and Mark, and our special guest tonight, Dave.
We were talking a moment ago about the Finn and Jake card game Card Wars that was kind of a joke in an episode and suddenly become a real-life thing. Same thing happened in Big Bang Theory, Dave?
Apparently, yeah.
What was that game called?
It's called Warlords of Ka'a.
And that was like a joke and now it's a real thing?
Yeah, so basically I was going to say a different word. It was a wee take of a like a magic type game.
All right.
And I understand that it has been released in at least a digital form, if not a physical form.
Okay, well, that show's got a lot to answer for. That and those bloody Bazinga t-shirts.
Bazinga.
Sick of seeing. David, welcome to The Dice Man Cometh.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit about yourself and your own gaming history and what you've been playing lately. We know you love your Game of Thrones. What else? Where did it all start for you?
I've always been a bit of a gamer, but mostly video games, that sort of thing. And it comes around being a computer teacher for a dad and just kind of...
Yep, and you're an IT geek yourself,
IT
of course.
Geek, yeah, so yeah. Video games was kind of...
Yeah, you're pretty much doomed, aren't you?
Yeah, totally doomed. a little while ago, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I saw the Game of Thrones board game first edition on a game shelf, I think in Birchall's in Launceston or something like that.
With the huge map of Westeros and all the different family crests on it.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. It takes about 6 hours to get Half-Blade. You know? And I was a huge Game of Thrones fan from reading the books. I'd been reading those, I think, since 97 or something. And so I beat that up and kind of played that a few times. Not that, you know, many times because it needs 4 or 5 people to be any good.
I still haven't tried that. I'm dying to play that.
It's huge.
I've seen it. I saw it at BorderCon. One person there had the fan-created expansion that allowed it was either 8 or 9 people to play. It was epic. It went for most of the day.
Yeah. They'll be approaching Twilight Imperium 3 level, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And you've got the rarest of things as well. You've got a partner who likes to play games as well.
Yes, that's right.
which is awesome.
Yep.
And so what sort of stuff, games, do you guys play together?
Look, we've got way too many games, to be perfectly honest. We try to pick games that can be played with 2 players, but can also be played with up to 5 or 6. Because that way, you know, we can play it ourselves or we can play it at game nights and other people and that sort of thing. Probably some of our favourites would be Sentinels of the Multiverse, which I'm familiar with.
Yep, the superhero game.
Yep, yeah, we quite like that.
Trent's been bagging on that lately.
Yeah, I heard that.
Fallen out of love with
it. Yeah, look, I should try it again. I must admit, I've been looking at it lately going, I spent a lot of money on that.
Yeah, we just picked up, they brought out a new reprint of the expansion Infernal Relics, as well as...
The Shattered Timelines one?
No, the other one.
Rook City.
They brought it out in a big box.
Yep.
And so we picked that up, so we've got all the expansions for it now.
Yeah.
Quite like Takanoko. The
growing
panda.
Growing bamboo and having it eaten by the panda.
Panda to poo out the other end. That's
another
right.
one you love, Trent.
Look, it was a nice little game.
It's cute.
It's cute.
The panda's really cute.
Yeah. And so are you playing things like Takanoko with your... How old are your kids?
We've got a 4.5-year-old and almost 6-year-old.
All right, so you're not playing Game of Thrones?
No, not yet.
Quite. What sort of things... Takanoko would surely be a contender.
Yeah, we've played Takanoko with them. That went over pretty well. They love the panda game, as they call it.
Mm.
They pretty much play that straight out of the box as is. They, you know, they roll the weather dice and they play all the cards.
Yep.
We started them off just doing the panda cards, just to make it a bit easier, but especially our older one, she kind of wanted to do more. So
and do you hold like a regular game night at your place? Or?
Yeah, about every couple of months we tend to just have some friends over for a game night, our night.
But with the kids?
Generally not with the kids for those ones.
Right.
Probably because they, you know, it tends to be after dinner time and they tend to go to bed. And
sure.
That sort of thing. And, you know, when you pull out Cards Against Humanity, you don't really want the kids are around.
Well, Cards Against Humanity, one of the filthiest games in existence. Yes.
Yeah, it shocked me when I played it for the first
time. Can't even really begin to explain it. Just look it up on the interwebs.
Yeah, not safe for work.
No. So what sort of games are the kids playing, and do you make time to do that with them? Is it a family sort of activity, a bit of bonding together?
Yeah.
Or is it more about arguing and going to bed early?
A little bit of both. It's something that we tend to do in on the weekends and stuff. Sunday arvos and that sort of thing tends to be quiet time anyway, so we'll kind of, you know, pull some games out.
Mm-hmm.
They both love Ticket to Ride.
Okay.
You know, Pretty Colours, and they love the trains and placing them on the track and all that sort of stuff. So they've played Carcassonne. Tile laying.
I think that's one that's instantly appealing for kids as well, because it is like a very simple jigsaw, I suppose. It's a jigsaw where you can essentially put almost any piece together.
Exactly, as long as you meet the cities on cities and stuff.
And then there's the Kids of Carcassonne, which is literally any tile will go together.
A really simple version.
But I think, you know, you don't even need to worry about it. No, just go straight to the main thing.
Some of the games we play with them, we've actually adjusted some of the rules to make it a bit simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Pandemic, for example, needs a little simplification.
Are you playing Pandemic with your kids?
We did play Pandemic once with them, or twice. We basically just gave them each a disease tray.
Right, this is saving the world from various outbreaks, 4 different deadly, very colourful diseases that are wiping out humanity.
Yeah.
How old are your kids again?
4.5 and almost 6. Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah. that one we just kind of really simplified. That was one of the first ones we tried with them and just said, look, you know, here's a cube. You flip over a card.
Right.
And the colour of the card, because, you know, you've got the 4 different colours, you place a cube on that city on the table, and whoever runs out of cubes first is the winner.
Yeah, well, I suppose when you put it like that, it's...
It just became a cube pusher.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It could have been Lords of Waterdeep or... anything else.
And I have to admit, talking about age-appropriate games, I did play City of Horror with my daughter at one point, which is the game of zombie invasion of a city.
Didn't she try to kill you?
Yeah. She took great pleasure in throwing Dad to the zombies.
Now, look, straight after this, I have to butt in and say, I'm off to the Billy Bragg concert.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay.
So,
please do interrupt to talk about your social life. Mark, go ahead.
In honour of that...
Right.
and in honour of Game of Thrones, I found a Billy Bragg song about life with the lions.
Okay.
Thank you, Billy. That was Life with the Lions from Billy Bragg, who I'm seeing later on tonight here in Hobart, and I can't wait.
You're so excited. Look at
you. I am. I've been waiting months to see Billy Bragg. It's fantastic.
Your little cheeks are glowing.
Anyway, Life with the Lions, it's all about the Lannisters.
I just want to pat you on the head and send you out of here with a sweet in your mouth.
You're with Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We are here, Trent and Mark, with our friend Dave from the Hobart Game Society. And we've been talking about family games. And I wanted to ask Dave, have you come across the company Game Right and their kids' games at all?
We've got a couple of Game Right games, Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert being the main ones, but not any specific kids' games.
No, I think that's sort of been more of their foray into more gamer-type games. My kids are now 12 and 16, and when they were sort of 3, 4, 5, 6, I came across a couple of Game Right games. One's called The Land of Landlock, which is almost like chess in Carcassonne-type tiles.
Right, yeah.
Another one called Frog Juice, which is about making spells, but it's actually about adding up numbers and things like that. So it's a very kiddie game, and much less of a gamer's game than Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, which are obviously fantastic games that you can play even with adults.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, can we recommend a couple of kids' games, maybe?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, the one thing I want to start off by not recommending is Settlers of Catan, because frankly, I mean, look, it's a great game. We owe it a debt because it kind of kickstarted the whole modern gaming hobby, but it's boring, let's face it.
Yeah.
And you know, growing corn or whatever, it's not very exciting for a kid, so let's just move on
the wood for sheep joke.
True.
I don't know if that's appropriate with five-year-olds, though, Dave.
Possibly not.
It was over their heads, I think.
Magic Labyrinth is a great one for very little kids. And it's a play with a steel ball and a series of magnets, and you actually build a maze underneath the board, and then you have to try and remember which way the walls have gone after that by moving the ball around. That's a fantastic one. It's got a neat little trick, and as soon as the ball hits one of the walls under the board, it drops down and you pick it up and you just go again. Look, one that my daughter's really gotten into is Tobago, which is the treasure hunting one. And I think anything that might be just maybe a little bit above their age range, but you've got to collect treasure or collect little tokens or something, that's usually appealing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a similar vein, our girls like Coloretto, is like it's a set collection game.
Coloretto. Is that like Zooloretto?
It's a predecessor to Zooloretto.
Right.
Basically, in Coloretto, you just have a bunch of cards. In a deck, you have a hand of cards, and you have to basically discard them in runs, and you're trying to collect as many of a certain amount of colours as you want. So you get like three colours, and you want to collect as many to get points.
Yep. So I think that Zooloretto is sort of like is basically they've put a theme onto their game, haven't they?
With zoo animals, yeah. So yeah, you're trying to collect these runs of colours, and just like five pink and five purple and five green. But if you get you want, I think it's three colours, because you have those three and they give you plus points, and any cards you have of any other colour outside, they give you minus points. Our girls tend to want to get all the pink ones. It's like, I get all the pink, I want all the rainbow ones, and I've got like 13 of them. It's like, you only score the first five.
Maybe. But that's yeah. We did talk about Carcassonne and sort of actually steering clear probably of the kids of Carcassonne.
Yeah, just go straight to the main game.
Well, the one I think is great is actually the Hunters and Gatherers for younger kids. Yeah. I think we talked about it before, just because it simplifies that farmer rule, just because the farmer rule for new gamers, and particularly for young kids, can be a little bit complicated, whereas the counting the number of animals in the paddock is really simple.
And look, one more, if I may, and this might be one a little bit more for the dads as well, who are maybe looking for something a little bit more sophisticated to play with the kids, Mice and Mystics.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, this is a descent-style dungeon crawl with an episodic sort of storytelling vibe where the different adventures characters in it, all stitched together into a story. I think there might be maybe 9 or 10 episodes in it. So there's a lot of gameplay in there and plenty of replayability as well. But of course, it's all about little mice who are armed to the teeth with little swords and stuff, and they've got to stop the evil witch who's overthrowing the king of the kingdom and all that sort of thing. Charming little story, and it's the sort of thing you can get together and play regularly, play through a chapter on a Sunday with a couple of friends, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that does need an adult to sort of run the game somewhere. But that is something as well that, you know, the kids can have a bit of fun beating Dad up as well, which I think is always a plus.
Oh, yeah.
At least with my daughter, because she's, you know, sadistic.
Yeah. We've actually got that. We haven't managed to play it yet, but it's sitting on the shelf.
You'll get there. Yeah,
saying,
you'll get there.
You spent all that money and you haven't played it yet.
And look, one of the old favourites of mine, we've mentioned it probably 1,000 times on this show, Ticket to Ride.
Mm-hmm.
Is brilliant for families. You know one of my favourite places to go on Ticket to Ride? The city of Chicago.
Are you going to play a song by Chicago?
No.
I want to hear a song by Chicago.
No.
Can we stop this and play If You Leave
Me
Now?
No, we're gone. You're out of here. Bye. In the city of... I think Christy's said enough now. Do you know Christy Moore is the brother... of Luca Bloom.
I just know that we've played...
Whose real name is Kevin Moore.
We've played both Christy Moore and Gojira in the one show.
Musical variety from us.
That's nice. It's the Dice Men Cometh.
Absolutely. I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what now.
Well, I actually just wanted to get in a quick thank you to a couple of people who've reviewed our show on iTunes. Believe it or not, we've actually got 2 5-star reviews.
Woo-hoo!
On iTunes.
That weren't written by us.
Yeah. There's one each. Yeah.
Thanks to Tabletop Tragic, who's said that we're easy to listen to, fun, keep up the good work. And thanks to the Gardener 007, who says that we almost make it sound like Tasmania is a fun place to be. And you know what, Gardener 007? It almost is.
It almost is. Now, look, I wanted to mention tonight, just to give a quick rundown of some of the upcoming board game events.
Oh, now, before you do that, sorry, just slipped my mind.
Yep.
Just talking about iTunes, we do have a delay in the podcast at the moment.
Yes.
And we've explained this on our Facebook page due to some very, very real technical difficulties. I could go into it and explain it all now, but frankly, it's long-winded and boring. If you want the full explanation, go onto our Facebook page, search for Dice Men Cometh. You get the full rundown there. Ask any questions you want. The podcast will be back soon.
Hopefully.
Mm.
We'll see how it goes.
Sorry, yes.
And Dave, look at us. Yeah, look, so I've been searching board game conventions, because obviously we've been talking about us and our board game convention coming up in August.
All right.
Hobart Winter Games Fest, the 4th Hobart Winter Games Fest, which is going to be on the 9th and 10th of August. But I found out there's actually a few more events on than I actually realised. A couple of them. A thing called Icon, EYECon, which is RPGs only in Sydney on the 18th and the 21st of April, from the 18th to 21st of April, at exactly the same time as Conquest, which is a Melbourne-based board gaming event, 18th to 21st of April. WellyCon, I'd like to hear from any of our New Zealand listeners, because I've heard WellyCon is quite a huge event, but there's no dates on their webpage at this stage. It's still talking about 2013. So apparently it happens on the Queen's Birthday long weekend in Wellington normally, but they don't have the dates for this weekend. I did look up the Queen's Birthday long weekend is the 2nd of June. But if there are any New Zealand listeners out there, for our New Zealand listener, get in touch and let us know. Of course, the big one coming up for us, Albury BorderCon on the Queen's Birthday long weekend in Australia.
That's right, a gathering of nerds.
We
in
will
Albury.
Be there.
Yes.
On the same weekend even, there's the Toy and Game Expo in Sydney. There's WinterCon in Canberra on the 12th and 13th of July.
The sister event of their big...
CanCon.
CanCon.
That's their winter version, yeah.
Yep.
Concentric, which is the one held in trains in the Barossa Valley. As in, you stay in trains. The hotel accommodation is trains. That one, the dates are still to be confirmed sometime around the 19th to 21st of September. PAX, the 2nd, I think, PAX Australia, is on in Melbourne from the 31st of October to the 2nd of November.
This is the big pop culture festival, of course. It's the Penny Arcade festival, event, whatever it's called.
Penny Arcade Expo. That's where PAX comes from.
And so it's comics, it's cosplay, it's everything. There's a huge board game area.
Yeah, look, it's just been massive. And the fact now that there's two in North America, there's two in the US, one in Canada and one in Australia, I think is a huge coup for us to have one here in its second year. And apparently it was absolutely massive last year.
Very
one more
nice,
to mention.
Very nice if you can afford it.
Oh,
it's
yes.
a little on the expensive side.
Well, I think
side.
They've already sold out of the big three-day passes when I had a look on their website.
All three-day passes, I think, sold out in the day.
Mm. Do you know how much they were, Dave?
No idea.
Look, it's up. It's over 100.
Yeah.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. The last one, the Tasmanian Spring Games Fest.
Yes.
Another Tasmanian event. The first year for this one runs from the 28th of November to the 1st of December.
Now, that's a fully catered weekend, that one, and it's at a camping ground.
Yeah, a Girl Scout camp, I believe.
Yeah, but I mean...
With the what are they called, dormitory type accommodation.
Yeah, we're not going to put you in tents.
Yeah, and fully catered. Look, one place I found, I hadn't come across this before, a website called gameconventioncentral.com.
Right.
And they've got an Australia New Zealand section where you'll see most of these events listed, as well as other events all around the world. So
if you are running events, get your details on there. Let us know your details as well. And if you want us to promote a particular event that's coming up, we don't mind. Send us the details. Contact us via the Facebook page.
We might even have a chat with you like we did with the guys from CanCon.
Always happy to, because we're all about the Australian and the New Zealand by default board gaming scene. And, you know, we want to get as much local content on this show as
absolutely
we possibly can.
Right.
We want to keep getting more good reviews on iTunes and some bad ones. If, you know, what I'm saying is if people want to hear something out of this show, let us know. We'll try and do it. Okay?
Yeah. So, Dave, before we go, anything else you'd like to tell us about?
Not that I can really think of.
not to put you on the spot or anything like that.
Has coming in here and seeing how this is made taken the, you know, sort of tarnished it a little? Has it taken the sheen off the wonderfulness?
No, not really. There wasn't that much sheen to start with.
It's the magic of radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we are off. We are the Dice Men Cometh. Trent and Mark, we're heading out of here for another time. We're finishing up early because basically... I've got a gig to go to, and Trent's got games to play. Stick around. We've got some great music coming up. We've got the Edge of Reason and their experiment. I wonder how they're... What's it called? Transdimensional viewing? No, it's not called that. I'm sure they're going to explain all about it. It's going to be on in a little
psychic
while.
Readings over the radio. Isn't that how it's working?
No, remote viewing.
Remote viewing.
Look, I want to hear how it went. Except I'm going to be at Billy Bragg. So I'm going to play some music, a great Tassie track by Secret Valley. It's called The Nightlife. We're going to catch up with you next weekend. We're going to go to our nightlife. Thank you again for listening in, and we'll see you next week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.